This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. The U.S. Supreme Court has issued a ruling that probably opens the door to future rulings on affirmative action in college admissions. In a Texas case called Fisher, the Supreme Court voted 7-1 to take the plan back to the courts in Texas. One of those who has been closely involved in this case is Lori Alvino McGill. She is a partner in the Washington, D.C. office of Latham & Watkins, and she was a principal author of the University of Texas merits brief in the Supreme Court in the Fisher case. She was here in Atlanta recently for a forum by the Federal Bar Association here in Atlanta. Lori Alvino McGill, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You were there at the Supreme Court this morning. Was everybody expecting a definite yes or no, or were they expecting this kind of, okay, go back a few steps?
You know, I think it's fair to say that because the case was argued all the way back in October, that today's decision might be viewed by many as a little bit anticlimactic. So I think a lot of spectators might have been expecting a very significant blow to the use of affirmative action in higher education. And some even speculated that the court might overrule some of its past precedents altogether.
Instead, the court sent the case back to the courts in Texas, but it did give them a bit of a guideline here, saying that they have to apply strict scrutiny to the government's affirmative action plan. Did that surprise you?
It didn't. And I guess that's why this decision is really, in a lot of ways, it's a non-decision on a lot of the issues that were teed up in the case. Because, of course, going back to the first approval of the consideration of race in higher education, the court has demanded that it pass this high standard, you know, the strict scrutiny standard. And, you know, today's opinion says for seven justices, which I think is also quite significant, that really nothing has changed. We take those precedents as they come to us because the parties didn't ask us to overrule them. So we're not going to consider whether they should be overruled. And instead, we're going to say, you know, the Fifth Circuit, take another look, applying the same precedents that have been in place for decades.
Explain a little bit what strict scrutiny means and why it's important.
Sure. So any classification of people that's based on race must be subject to a searching judicial review, which we call strict scrutiny. And it's a multi-step test. The first part of that asks whether there is a compelling state interest in making the classification. And I'll stop right there for a second because the court simply reaffirmed its prior precedents today to the effect that, yes, seeking broad diversity, including racial diversity, can be a compelling state interest that could justify, in the right circumstances, the use or consideration of race in admissions. But so the second part of the test asks whether the plan, the way you implement that classification, is narrowly tailored to the compelling interest. And that's really the crux of what is at issue in this case. And significantly, seven members of the court concluded that although the Fifth Circuit used language that the court thought was not faithful to the strict scrutiny precedents, the court did not hold that the Texas plan at issue didn't meet that part of the test. It simply remanded to the Fifth Circuit to take another look under the correct standard.
So for the layperson here, and I hope I'm not being too crude here with the analysis, the court is saying to the Texas court, okay, take a look at this. The state could have a compelling interest in using affirmative action as part of the admissions formula, but it can't go too far in implementing it. It can't have a very broad scope in implementing it. Is that too rough an analysis of it?
No, I mean, I think that captures the gist. I mean, basically, the requirement is that it has to be modest. So the consideration of race can't trump other things about an applicant. It has to be just one of many factors, and an applicant still has to be considered in a very individualized way. So in other words, you can't have quotas or, you know, reserved seats for people based strictly on their racial or ethnic background. You also have to have checks on the way that race is being considered throughout the process. So there's sort of a substantive component. You can't use it too much. It can't weigh too heavily in the process. And then there's a procedural component. Is the way that it's implemented, does it ensure that admissions officers, for example, aren't simply working backward to a number that they think, you know, is the number of, let's say, African-American students who should be in the class?
Now, you wrote the merits brief for the University of Texas. You're one of the people who wrote it. From your point of view, is today's decision at least a moral victory in the sense that the university can continue with its affirmative action plan, at least for now?
I think it's fair to say that we and the university are actually very pleased with today's decision. Of course, we would have preferred an outright affirmance of the decision below, but this really comes as close as it possibly could without doing that. And I think that it's important to keep in mind that only one justice dissented, Justice Ginsburg. So none of the other more liberal justices who are on the record in favor of affirmative action saw anything in the majority opinion that prevented them from joining it. And it's really because it's so very narrow. It simply affirms Grutter and Bakke, these two, you know, prior decisions on which Texas's plan is based. And we think, the court's decision will allow the university to ultimately, you know, prevail and show that it actually has been following the law and that the university's plan does consider race in an appropriate way.
So you're saying this is a good omen for you when the case comes back to Texas?
I think it is. I mean, I think we obviously have to be a little bit cautious, but I would say that there's no reason to believe that the university will not prevail below, because, you know, we believe they've fully complied with the test that was articulated today by the majority.
Of course, the basic question is, what is the state's compelling interest in this day and time in using affirmative action as a factor in race relations? This certainly was an issue that came up here in Georgia. Georgia's affirmative action plan was tossed by a lower court some years ago, and it hasn't really used affirmative action since in college and university admissions.
That's right. So what's interesting is I think a lot of folks expected the Supreme Court to come down on the question of whether the use of affirmative action in higher education has sort of outlived its purpose, or if, you know, things had changed so much that it was no longer a compelling interest. And the way the case was decided, and this is why it's so much of an anticlimactic kind of result, that the court just didn't question that. They didn't re-examine whether it continues to be a compelling interest. They simply took as a given, as Justice Kennedy says in his majority opinion, that the statements by Justice Powell in Bakke and again by the majority in Grutter are correct. That is that it is still a compelling interest in achieving, you know, a broadly diverse class in higher education, and that consideration of race is only one factor in that analysis, but it's an important one.
And in your brief for the university, what were you arguing is the compelling state interest other than a diverse student body? Was that it, or was there more to it than that?
Well, I mean, I think that's most of it, that, you know, the University of Texas at Austin continues to have, as it has had in the past, a compelling interest as the state's flagship university in maintaining and creating a broadly diverse environment for all of its students because of the educational benefits that flow from that. I think the university, you know, we also argued that we had a special kind of role as the flagship of a highly diverse state in ensuring that the pathways to leadership were open for individuals of all ethnic and racial backgrounds.
One of the questions that came up in the forum here in Atlanta in which you participated was the feeling that a lot of the students who are admitted with affirmative action as one of the factors don't end up making it in the end, and that really makes it actually counterproductive that you end up almost with a less diverse graduating class, even though you might have a more diverse admitting class. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think for one thing, the data don't really bear that out as a general matter, and they don't bear that out at the University of Texas at Austin. I'll get the numbers probably slightly wrong here, but the graduation rates and the GPA, relative GPAs of the two different parts of the class, so the class that's admitted through the top 10% law, which admits, anyone graduating in the top 10% of a Texas high school that ranks its students is guaranteed admission to the university. The other 25% have gotten admitted through this holistic review process that considers race among many other factors. And if you compare the two populations, the graduation rates and the relative GPAs are not significantly different. So I don't think the data bear out the so-called mismatch theory.
Texas does have a very unusual and perhaps unique formula here. So will whatever decision the court reaches actually affect other states like Georgia that are watching very closely and have had their own experiences in court with this?
Well, I think it's very hard to say, and that would turn on how the Fifth Circuit decides this particular case. I mean, I think that it's possible that it will have only a very narrow effect. Of course, if the Fifth Circuit upholds Texas's plan, it's not likely to have a ripple effect on any other state, except maybe as a policy matter, it might in fact encourage states that are not using the consideration of race in their flagships to do so. But, as I said, the Supreme Court's decision today really just sort of restates the law as it's been. And I don't see much sort of changing in light of whatever ultimate Fifth Circuit decision we get.
So you're not disappointed that there wasn't a ringing affirmation of affirmative action, if you will?
Well, I think it's, of course, a little bit disappointing because it's technically a loss. The decision was vacated, and of course we were looking for the Fifth Circuit to be affirmed. But I am, I'm very encouraged by the fact that the Supreme Court refused to cut back or gut its prior precedents on this. It also sort of implicitly rejected some important, arguments. So I think in a way, the decision could be read to strengthen affirmative action because now you have seven justices of the court. Although they explicitly didn't revisit Grutter, I don't want to be too bullish about it, but they signing on to an opinion that said, the University of Texas's plan may be constitutional without making, any commentary about the critical mass concept, no backtracking on Grutter or Bakke, and really implicitly rejecting Fisher's arguments that the university was somehow engaged in racial balancing, and also reaffirming that universities get quite a lot of deference on that initial threshold question of whether they have a compelling interest in seeking a broadly diverse class.
And just to clarify, the Fisher you're referring to making the argument is Abigail Fisher. She was the plaintiff in the case, and she sued Texas saying that the affirmative action policy cost her a spot in the freshman class of 2008, Abigail Fisher, a young white woman.
That's correct.
But because the court basically sent things back to Texas, do you think that other states, again, Georgia, one of them, that are watching this very closely and trying to decide whether to use affirmative action again or not, this really doesn't give them much to go on, does it?
Well, the one thing that it does tell them is that they have to be sure to build a record if they decide to adopt a policy similar to the Texas plan or really, any policy that reintroduces or introduces the consideration of race. They have to adopt a record that could satisfy strict scrutiny, which, frankly, universities and states should have been on notice of this for a lot of years, but the majority opinion just kind of reiterates that it will not be taken on good faith, as a given, that the way that you're using race is narrowly tailored to the compelling interests that you're seeking. So while, you know, states and universities will get a lot of latitude in deference to their judgment that it's necessary to pursue a diverse student body, what they won't get deference on and what they'll have to show is that there's not a workable race-neutral alternative to achieving that same goal. And they will also, you know, have to show that the way that they're doing it is individualized and modest and not sort of a quota in disguise.
Lori Alvino-McGill is a partner in the Washington, D.C. office of Latham & Watkins, and she was a principal author of the University of Texas merits brief in the Supreme Court case of Fisher, which the court ruled on today. Thanks so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.